Welcome,
Sure.
everybody, to this today's episode of Tel Aviv Diary. Today we have a special guest, Ari Hofenug. I hope I've pronounced it correctly. And I'll let him tell a little about himself, and then we'll get into a discussion. So, Ari, tell me a little bit what you do and why we'd want to hear from you.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's an absolute pleasure to be with you here today. My last name, Hoffnung, by the way, is hard to pronounce in English, but in German it means hope. So if we were to converse in German, it would be a lot smoother on the tongue. The Israeli variation would be tikva, right? And that would be
Okay.
even easier
That's very easy.
to
Yeah.
pronounce.
You need to move, make Aliyah and be called Tikvah. It's an easy name.
Well, let me tell you, when I was a slightly younger man and I approached my late paternal grandfather and I asked him what he thought about changing our last name to either Hope or Tikva, he took my hand and he looked at me, looked into my eyes, and said, "You've always been a Hoffnung, you always will be a Hoffnung." So, needless to say, I'm not changing my name anytime soon. What my descendants, and I have three of them at the moment, decide to do, that will remain to be
That.
seen. But we will see. But really great to join you. I love your show, and I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite some time. Just by way of background, Mark, professionally, my background's in finance. I have an MBA from NYU. I spent the first part of my career on Wall Street. I then spent 5 years or so in public service. I worked for the city of New York. I like to brag that I'm a fifth generation New Yorker and a dad to three sixth generation New Yorkers. So my family's been here for quite some time. We have deep roots here. So it was a pleasure to work for the city for 5 years. I also worked on Mayor Bloomberg's reelection campaign in 2009 and then spent about 4 years in an appointed role of deputy comptroller, where I had oversight of the city's budget and worked closely with the city's pension funds. After that experience, I like doing different things. And I know from reading your fascinating bio, you like doing different things too. So perhaps you can relate a bit, because
Sometimes
you
that
have a
was by
very.
choice, but that's okay.
I spent 10 years or so in the medical cannabis industry in a variety of entrepreneurial roles. I helped take a company public in Canada. I sold companies, bought companies, and I hit a milestone birthday about 2 years ago, the big 5-0, and I decided now is the time to do something is more serious or serious in my career. And that really led me to JLens and the Anti-Defamation League, and perhaps to our conversation today. JLens has been in existence since 2012. It is a nonprofit organization that today operates under the auspices of the ADL but remains independent. And it laser focuses on maintaining relationships and engaging in corporate advocacy. And I'm sure we'll talk about that. And the Anti-Defamation League certainly is a little bit before 2012. I know you're a student of history. It was founded in 1913, and really has a timeless mission of combating anti-Semitism and hate and bringing justice for all. So that's where I find myself today. And again, it's great to be in dialogue with you.
Pleasure to have you on, to say the least. So, what have you been doing these last 2 years? There's been no war. There's been no anti-Semitism in America all of a sudden, right? It's just been quiet.
Well, it's I know in the Jewish community we are allow ourselves to have a healthy sense of humor with these things because that's something we cultivated for generations, right?
It's called a coping mechanism.
And look, today we find ourselves at a very interesting time. At a very unfortunate time since October 7th, and you're sitting in Israel, so you certainly experienced October 7th from a different lens. But as you know, October 7th, in one way or another, was experienced pretty much by Jews around the world, albeit in different ways, but nonetheless experienced. And something the ADL has been doing, Mark, for over 40 years is it has been measuring and quantifying the number of anti-Semitic incidents in the United States. And this is something that ADL takes very seriously, and it's something that is often quoted by elected officials and by members of Congress and governmental agencies. And I know you cover a lot of finance and entrepreneurship. And when you're talking about business, you love to see kind of a hockey stick growth. But unfortunately, that's the type of growth and that's the trend line that we're seeing today when it comes to anti-Semitic incidents. And in 2024, we hit nearly 10,000 in the United States. And that's most likely a real undercount. So it has really worsened. It is felt in all facets of life. I know this is no surprise to you or your listeners, but I'll just share in my own life, in my home life. The Jewish school that my kids attend, Kinneret Day School in the Bronx, now has an armed guard outside. This is something new. The synagogue we attend on Shabbat and holidays, the Hebrew Institute of Riverdale, does the same. We were visiting our kids. I won't name the camp, but we were visiting our kids in camp this summer, and there were armed guards from the Israeli army who are graduates or alumni of IDF. Who were there making sure in Pennsylvania that it was a safe space for kids and their families and their grandparents to come and visit them. This is a new reality that my kids are growing up under in the United States. I think very different than the way I grew up and probably very different than the way you grew up, Mark, in New York, in the United States and beyond. And this is a new reality that Jews in the United States are facing.
Yeah, very different. Although, I lived through the transformation when worldwide terrorism came to New York and to the Jewish community, in the sense that I used to work for the Jewish Agency at 515 Park Avenue in, I guess it was the early 70s, 73, 74, 75. And when I first got there was a guy, two retired cops, sitting behind desks, and that's how you got into the building. Within a year or two, it was this whole setup where there was, a closed door, an open door, and serious security. So, yes, I think the anti-Semitic aspect of this is quite new. I think in terms of the Israel aspect, Israelis have been targeted for a long time, or at least potentially targeted. So, it's new, and yet sometimes what's new is old, often.
There's no question, Ed. I mean, Israelis have been targeted before 1948, right? The Jews in Israel, certainly before 1948. I recently read a book about the Hebron massacre, which was very tr obviously a horrific and tragic incident. And it's just a reminder that unfortunately, the people in Israel, the Jews in Israel, have been dealing with these types of threats to their life and security, really even before the founding of the state. Yeah, totally
Absolutely.
agree. Totally agree.
Well, okay, so you work primarily in the corporate world in terms of anti-Semitism and Israel advocacy, I guess, in a way, trying to explain what.
That's right. So what does it mean to work in anti-Semitism in the corporate world? What does it mean, and how do those statistics and unfortunate things that are certainly happening in the United States and beyond, in terms of what diaspora Jewry is experiencing in the form of anti-Semitism, how does that play out in the corporate world? So, what I want you and your listeners to think of is products, platforms, and workplaces. Let me take you through that frame. Think of products and platforms. Think of a company like Meta, right? Think of Instagram, think of WhatsApp, think of Facebook, think of all the sort of digital properties that they own. Unfortunately, the digital sphere, which now Meta's properties, the most recent statistic I read, Mark, is that there are 3 billion daily users. And this is hard to imagine, 3 billion daily users, right? So when we talk about the proliferation of hate, the digital sphere has really been a way that folks who want to promote their hate and amplify their hate have been able to do so in ways that we couldn't even imagine a few years ago. And we have seen, and one of the things we do at JLens is we work with our colleagues at the ADL and beyond, and we monitor hate online. And by the way, it's not just hate against Jews. There's hate against disabled people. There's a hate against gay folks. But specifically, our focus is hate against Jewish people. There's a tremendous amount of Jewish folks who are harassed. And again, this is not shocking. This is well known to anybody who has a Facebook account, anybody who has an Instagram account and who identifies as being Jewish. They see what goes on. We use our shareholder voice. We use our shareholder voice to engage with companies like Meta, not only as stakeholders, as users, which in fact we all are in some way, or at least most of us, but also as shareholders. And that gives us access to their investor relations arm, to high-ranking officials in the company, to the board, and so on and so forth. Not only at Meta, think of a place like Alphabet. Most people know them still as Google, right? But recently, just a few months ago, they had to terminate 28 Google employees after they hosted a 10-hour illegal sit-in in their executive offices, holding signs like "No more genocide for profit," alleging that somehow Google is complicit in genocide because of the business they do with the Israeli government. Okay, and this is a change. This is a sea change from years ago. I want to be clear, Mark. We have nothing against freedom of speech. We cherish freedom of speech. We cherish the rights to protest. We're proud to live in a democracy where you can protest. It used to be if you wanted to protest a big company like Google, a couple people would stand outside, the parking lot, the gates in the morning or in the evening when the executives are coming and leaving, and they would hold their signs and they would shout loud. And God bless them for doing that. But this is very different. These are employees of Google who are being organized by hateful anti-Israel movements to protest in the workplace, to bring their politics into the workplace. How does a Jewish engineer feel at a morning meeting when one of her colleagues is wearing a Googlers Against Genocide t-shirt to the meeting? How does that make that person feel with their Jewish identity? So we are dealing with new issues, both on the product side and on the workplace side, and that is what JLens laser focuses on. It will come as no surprise to you that since 10/7, we are tracking over 75 S&P 500 companies, over 75 S&P 500 companies that have been targeted by the anti-Israel boycott, divest, and sanctions movement. And these are top companies. They include companies, particularly companies that have deep relationships in Israel. Think Intel, think Amazon, think Airbnb, think General Dynamics. This is not just one industry. This crosses industries. And, again, I know you're a student of history, and I love that. Is the notion of discriminating against Jews economically new in our history? No, they've been doing it for over 1,000 years, right? From the guild bans in the 11th century to 19th century Europe to the 1930s in Nazi Germany to the Arab boycott. There's a long history here. But in our lifetimes, right, in our generation, this is the intensity. And the number of BDS campaigns is off the chart. BDS started in 2005, right? So we've been watching this movement for the past 20 years. But the past 2 years, the work that it's doing is really, really reaching new heights.
I mean, look, you talk about, I see two separate thrusts of your work, or necessity for two separate thrusts. One is the BDS actions, the actions trying to influence the company's policies. Then there's the other side of it, the companies themselves, which their algorithms are guilty of promoting anti-Semitism and anti-Israelism, or however you want to define that, whether by design or accidentally. And there, I mean, that has the greatest impact, quite honestly, right? In other words, the biggest, the fact that that so much of what kids are seeing are not coming from the newspapers and the traditional media. That's really very, very problematic. And I don't know how we can control that, quite honestly. I mean, you have companies that by themselves, with the exception of the one Chinese company, is inherently not anti-Israel, right? I mean, certainly Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg is not anti-Israel as a person. I don't think the Google brothers are anti-Israel. They have enormous facilities here in Israel, personally. But that, the, and I know they spent a fair amount of effort years ago in YouTube in terms of the finding ISIS, ISIS type videos and things of that nature. But it gets very difficult. It's very difficult to influence their policies. I mean, I don't know how have you even been successful at all in those areas. Getting them to take down things, I mean, are you successful at all? And certainly the algorithm is really the key. And of course, the algorithm is the most problematic.
No, all great points. So, I don't have, I don't think anybody has the influence to control what a Meta does, right? We have a we have an opportunity to influence what they do, and it's very important for the Jewish community to do everything possible to use its voice in speaking to Meta. And I want to share with you some of the stuff that we've been doing with Meta, but beforehand, I want to just take a step back and just for to frame what we're talking about. We live in interesting times. If we reflect on our history, Jewish folks have been in dialogue with the folks who are in charge since our existence. When I speak to Jewish groups, I often joke that Moses, 3,300 years ago, went to the Cairo lobbying office and registered as the first Jewish lobbyist. And he ran a had a campaign slogan, "Let my people go," and he had a campaign target. It was Pharaoh of Egypt, and his campaign was largely successful, right? He got most of the people of Israel out. And since then, the Jewish community has been in dialogue with czars, monarchs, communist government, socialist government, and to today. You worked in the Jewish community years ago. If you go into a local federation anywhere in the United States, most, if not all of them, have a community relations arm of some sort, and they're in dialogue with federal elected officials, state and local. And that's a key component of what they do. Now, we live at a time, Mark, where CEOs, some CEOs at least, are akin to heads of state. And some of the policies, like the Metas and Googles of the world, are as important, arguably, as some of the members of the United Nations. And I think we need to ask ourselves as a Jewish community, what do we do in this world where governments and businesses yield so much power and influence in the world? And I don't have the chutzpah to assert that the work we're doing at JLens is the entire answer for this challenge of how does the Jewish community engage with global corporations. But I hope that we're a part of the answer, that we're a sliver of the answer, and that in trying to engage in dialogue as Jewish people with companies, we're doing something that we need to do in 2025.
No doubt. It's just the task is huge, and that's
That's
why you're
right.
dealing with
That's right.
TikTok, which, as far as I'm concerned, this sale is nonsensical because it's leaving
Yeah.
the algorithm with the Chinese. So I don't even see what
That's right.
possible, what was the idea here?
Yeah. So I don't want to get into TikTok specifically, but I will tell you that with companies like Meta, we engage with them multiple times a year. They take down content when we bring to their attention content that, according to their own policies, shouldn't be there. We're in constant dialogue with large technology platforms like Meta. But what we really want them to do, and I think you're right to point this out, is to improve their algorithms. Because it's one thing for us to go, for the community to go with the, to them with one-offs and say, look, this piece of content violates your own policies, and usually they're pretty decent with taking things down, right? The algorithms and the safe and the guardrails are not 100% perfect, even in the world of AI. Nothing's perfect, but we really want them to change their algorithms. And what we have seen in the past year, specifically for Meta, is that they are allowing more hate on their platform. Now, what can we do about it? What can a small Jewish organization do about it, right? And the Jewish community and the Jewish people, right? We've never been numerous. That's not our play, right? What can we do about it? So, what we can do and what we did just a few months ago in May is we had a shareholder proposal, and there are different ways we engage in corporate advocacy. One of the ways is we engage in dialogue with a company. We're not looking to embarrass a company. We're not looking to do anything of that sort. We're looking, and many of our dialogue, many of the discussions we have with companies are behind the scenes. And we sensitize them into our perspective. And sometimes they take care of things and they take care of things wonderfully. And we appreciate that. But sometimes you speak to a company and you hit a brick wall. You have dialogue after dialogue and it goes nowhere. And that's what happened with Meta. And then you need to escalate. And for us in the corporate sphere, what escalation means is we filed a shareholder proposal that got on to the Meta ballot. And there, each company, each S&P 500 company, each public company in the United States, as you know, has an annual meeting. And according to SEC rules or regulations, people who own shares in a company could bring an issue to the board of a company. And we brought it. Now, you know this. Meta's a trillion-dollar plus company, right? We have $400 million, right? We have $400 million of assets under management right now. So how can we influence the vote? Very simple. It's not so simple, but let me tell you what we did. We go to the top 25 to 50 shareholders, to the JP Morgans of the world, to the BlackRocks of the world, to the Vanguards of the world, to the State Streets of the world. And we know they're voting tremendous amount of shares. And we engage with them on dialogue. And we say, guys, we know you're voting. You have thousands of votes every season. We want to laser focus on a few of these, particularly the one with Meta. Here's why we want your support on this. And I'm proud to say that we got nearly 50% of independent shareholders to support this proposal. That doesn't mean that that's what Meta did. This is going to be a multi-year battle with them. But th that's some of the stuff that we do.
With two forms of stock, it's very problematic to say the least in Meta.
You're an expert on inside ownership, I see. Absolutely. Mark Zuckerberg owns economically 15% of the company, but has voting rights because of different class shares. That's more than half. So he basically controls the void, but we will continue to speak out. And I'll tell you that the board needed to listen to JLens at the meeting because we got our director of advocacy, a wonderful woman by the name of Dani Nurik, my colleague, got to speak at the meeting and got to, from a Jewish values perspective, frame the issue of anti-Semitism and hate. And we may not have won the fight today, but we're not giving up tomorrow. We will continue to speak out against this and put the Jewish issues aside, which we certainly don't. I think in our own lives, in the lives of our children, and for those of us who are blessed with grandchildren, when we reflect on the role that social media plays on their life, I think we all believe that it's crossing a line and that it's going too far and there's too much hate and there's other issues to deal with. So we'll continue to speak out. We hope that from a policy perspective, over time, the algorithms improve in dealing with hate and improve in other areas as well. There's mental health issues. There's a lot of issues. Our laser focus is anti-Semitism and hate, but there are many issues. And I think people, not only Jews, people realize this. People realize that what's going online today is too much and has crossed the line of decency.
Look, I think from an historical perspective, I think people who are writing the history of this period 50 years from now, 100 years from now, will decide that social media was the cause of an awful lot of pain in the world, not only
That's
in the
right.
United States,
That's
but in the
right.
world. There's no question it's been a net negative, not a net positive.
Yeah.
And Jews always suffer the most. And so, which brings me to the other question I wanted to discuss to sort of end this is, we don't have a simple answer, but the reality is we both know that the amount of anti-Semitism in the world has grown exponentially in the last, both since the war, but even before that. I think I was looking at the ADL figures, even in the 7 or 8 years before the war, they were ticking up on a pretty constant basis. And of course, we had the Tree of Life attack, which long before, and we've had other attacks that have nothing, to do with Israel over the years, all over the world, and it's been a steady, steady increase. Now, part of that, from my perspective, in other words, my personal explanation of why anti-Semitism almost disappeared in the United States after World War II was because A, people may go, okay, I don't really like the Jews, but they saw what that brings, and they saw what the Holocaust was, and therefore, wait a second, this is not the direction I want to be. This is not who I am. B, every American practically served with a Jew in their unit. Jews had the highest enlistment rate of any minority group during World War II. So whatever ship you were on, whatever plane you were flying, you tend to have a Jew as one of as your co-pilot or as your shipmate in various forms. And three, when the state of Israel came along, it normalized Jews to be like an Italian American, a Polish American, a Jewish American. There was Israel, which was a little different, but it was there. But now we're so many years beyond, and World War II has faded. The Holocaust has faded, and I don't know if I'm not even one of these people who believe the Holocaust education is necessarily a net good anymore, but that's a different discussion. So what do we do? How do we fight a situation that's been, worldwide throughout our history? I mean, there's the Zionist answer, right? That's one answer. But we haven't really found other good answers. The answers that we found have been systematic things that took place that were beyond our control. Yes, ADL has been fighting anti-Semitism since the early part of the 20th century, but it was the other factors that ended it temporarily. So how can we mount the sort of defense that we need to do?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think it's top of mind for all of us, I think every day, and not just people who work in the Jewish community, but for all Jews, is what can we do to move the needle? And I think the first thing that I would say is, although the anti-Semitism is overwhelming, not to be overwhelmed, right? If you go back to our ethics of the fathers, right? There's a famous saying in Pirkei Avot that it's not your duty to finish the work, but neither are you at liberty to neglect it. And I think that has been important over Jewish history, is sometimes our problems seem so extraordinary in nature that it could be have psychologically a disabling effect on people, saying, I can't really do anything. This problem is so huge. Any advocacy that I do, any activism that I engage in will be meaningless. But that's not the path that we choose as Jews. The path that we choose, the path that I would urge people to choose, is to do whatever you can, is to do whatever you can to move the needle and not to become disabled by the terrible things that we witness around us, right? You mentioned the Tree of Life. Just in the past year in the United States, there have been so many incidents. Talk about, the Jewish governor of Pennsylvania's home being firebombed after the Passover Seder. Talk about the young couple who was gunned down outside the Jewish Museum in Washington, D.C. The senior citizens who in Boulder, Colorado, who were firebombed when they were trying to draw attention to the plight of the hostages in Gaza. So on one hand, this is overwhelming, but on the other hand, it's our tradition to speak out and to do whatever we can. And what we focus on in JLens is we focus on corporate advocacy. Will all of our campaigns be successful? No. But we will continue advocating on behalf of the Jewish community in this new world where governments yield power, but businesses yield power. And Mark, and you touched on this a bit, sometimes we're on opposite sides of the company. With Meta, right, we are not in agreement with them. But many times, our campaigns are not confrontational with the companies. So when BDS activists seek to get companies like Intel or General Dynamics or Lockheed to stop doing business in Israel or with Israel, the boards of these companies reject it. But what these BDS activists do is they try to get shareholders to support it and to send a message to companies that doing business with Israel is somehow in violation of human rights. And we push back on that, and we push back on that hard. And there's a tremendous amount of, as I said, BDS campaigns now. I know the Israeli government is talking about it. Certainly, it is on our radar screen. And you're right. There's an overwhelming amount of anti-Semitism going on now in the diaspora, but we will play our role. We will play our role, and we invite your listeners to visit us at investjewishly.org and to learn more about the work that we do at JLens, more about the work that we do with the Tov ETF, which is the first Jewish values ETF listed on the New York Stock Exchange. We have returns similar to other large cap equity indices like the S&P 500. And what we do is we're passive investors, but we're passionate advocates. And we use those shares. We use those shares to speak out for the Jewish community on issues that we care passionately about.
I would end with that because it was a good ending. However, I have to ask you one more question, and that's from an Israeli perspective. With the war hopefully over, and there's no question the war itself terribly, terribly damaged Israel's image in the world in every level, different level. What, as you know, like I said, assuming the war is now over, what can Israel and Israelis now do to at least begin to repair that damage? So it's a little different question, but it's an important question just the same.
Every time I visit Israel, and most recently was in August, every time I visit Israel, what I see, and I have a different lens, I think, as an American Jew, than perhaps other people have. But every time, and you had a wonderful guest on a few weeks ago, your friend from the dog park who is supporting Israeli Arab entrepreneurs. Okay. Every time I visit Israel, Mark, I see huge diversity, not just Jewish diversity, and there's a tremendous amount of Jewish diversity in Israel, but I also see diversity in terms of people of different faiths, Muslims and Jews working together, Christians working together, Druze working together. And I think part of the hasbara, if you will, is not only to tell the story, to push back when Israel is held to a double standard, unlike any other country in the world on human rights, but to tell the beautiful stories of the hospitals, of the tech companies, of the startups, of the universities, where so many people of different backgrounds are working together day in, day out. And I don't think people in the world know these stories. And those are stories that are always inspiring to me, and I think will be inspiring to others.
Okay. Well, I thank you. Thank you for being on this podcast, and hopefully we'll have you on again in the future. Good luck with all your work.
Thank you, Mark. A real pleasure to be here with you and your listeners. Be well.
Thank you.